The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters.
You have to take people with you on this agenda, because when we're making these big changes to tackle climate change, to restore nature, to have a more restorative, sustainable farming scheme, you know, changing our transport system so we have more investment in trains and walking and cycling over cars, then, you know, people need to be involved in those decisions and the decisions that affect them. So having an influence, a proper influence, a meaningful influence in those decisions is absolutely critical to this agenda. If you don't do that, you don't get the right decisions, you don't get buy-in from people, and you potentially get pushback.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Hearing. Big initiatives like the Paris Agreement and the UN Sustainable Development Goals really take effect when they pass into legislation. And in 2015, the Welsh Government passed the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, taking the UN Sustainable Development Goals and putting them into a legal framework. Their work on this has been groundbreaking and inspiring, so let's get into my interview with the Future Generations Commissioner and find out what it takes to put these ambitious global ideas into practice.
The Hearing.
Buridhar Shamai, good morning. How are you? My name is Derek Walker. I am the Future Generations Commissioner for Wales. I'm the only Future Generations Commissioner in the world. It's a statutory role, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you so much for coming to talk to me today, Derek. Before I started researching for this podcast, I have to admit, I had never heard of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. And I've since done a little bit of looking into it, and it's an incredibly interesting thing. So in case there are our listeners out there who, like me, had never heard of it, can you tell us, what is the Wellbeing of Future Generation Act?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to explain a bit more. And it's really interesting, actually. We're finding increasing numbers of people interested in finding out more about the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. So the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act was passed by the Welsh Parliament, the Senedd, back in 2015. And it's the latest stage on the journey in Wales to embed sustainable development, so doing the right things for the long term. And it's a piece of legislation that applies to the Welsh public sector, so devolved public services like local authorities, health boards, national parks, fire and rescue services, organisations like those that are devolved public sector organisations within Wales. And they're obliged to act for the long term, so put in place plans to deliver on long-term goals that we have for the country. So Wales has 7 wellbeing goals, which set out where we want to be as a country for the long term, and 50 indicators that measure our success in delivering against those wellbeing goals. And our public sector organisations are obliged to put in place plans to deliver on those goals. So this happened at a time in 2015 when the UN was agreeing the Sustainable Development Goals for the world, and Wales decided that we wanted to make our contribution to the delivery of the Sustainable Development Goals. So I think we're the only country in the world to have legislation in place that legally requires our public sector organisations, which include Welsh Government itself, I should have said that, to deliver for the long term and put plans in place to show how they're delivering for the long term. And I should probably explain what my job is. So I'm the Future Generations Commissioner. Again, it's a unique role in that it's a statutory position appointed by a Welsh Government, but statutory and independent. And it's similar to a Children's Commissioner or to a Older Persons Commissioner, but you're there to advise the public bodies about what they should be doing for the long term, to monitor their progress and to review their progress if you're not satisfied with that progress. So I'm there to provide that advice and support Wales's efforts to deliver on the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act.
That's really interesting. So you said that there were 7 wellbeing goals and 50 indicators. And I'm just curious, how do those translate into the duties on public bodies? So what duties does this act require of its public bodies?
So the public bodies are required to put in place the plans. They need to put in place their plans for delivering on those goals and on those indicators. So they put in place well-being objectives or well-being plans, and this explains how they are going to deliver on those goals and those indicators. What are the actions that they're going to be taking? There are all sorts of other things that go alongside it. We have something called public service boards, which brings together public sector organisations to work together on a regional or a local footprint. So health board, local authority, national park, coming together to collaborate on those issues that they can't deal with alone. And they put in place wellbeing plans. And effectively, you know, that's the duty, that's a responsibility on them as public bodies to act to deliver on the wellbeing of future generations act. So that's their responsibility.
Wow. So the lawyer in me, my ears immediately prick up there when you say that they have to have these plans in place. And the lawyer in me is saying, and what happens if they don't deliver them?
Well, this is the challenge, of course. The responsibility is for them to deliver on their plans. And I have a job to monitor progress with their plans and to, as I say, provide advice if they're not delivering on those, or undertake a review where I've not been satisfied and ask for, you know, change to happen. So that's the primary way in which they're held to account. Obviously, they're held to account by their population as well. So one of the, I think, the beauties of this approach that we have in Wales was the legislation was developed by a conversation, a national conversation called The Wales We Want, which was involving the public in developing the long-term vision for the country. So there's an accountability mechanism through that route, through the normal sort of council or health board scrutiny routes and so forth. And so that is how, you know, the accountability and the scrutiny takes place to ensure that the public bodies do deliver on their plans.
Interesting. So from my little bit of research on the Act, I noted that it has been law since 2016. And so that's 8 years in to this piece of legislation being enacted. And I'm really curious, what changes have you seen in this time? And we've talked about the plans that people have, but what sort of on the ground changes in services and things are you seeing? How is it being implemented?
Well, there's a few things you can say to that. I think this is about a cultural change as much as anything. So this is about looking at the long term whilst also tackling the short term issues. So we'll probably come on to this, but biggest challenges, of course, for government are dealing with immediate concerns about waiting lists or you know, services that are short of money and so forth. So this is about a cultural approach which recognises that you also have to keep an eye on the long-term issues that we face and not just look at the short-term issues, because those long-term issues will soon become much bigger ones if you don't get on top of them. So it's also, so it's about a way of working and a way of thinking, which also means it's sometimes difficult to directly see, you know, that the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act is solely responsible for a change. It's about enabling and empowering and giving permission and requiring public bodies to be thinking about the long term as well as the short term. But when you see these changes, you know, there were other factors at play as well. So one of the things that I like to point to is we've seen a big change in terms of transport policy within Wales. We've seen a shift towards more sustainable level funding for transport. So sustainable modes of transport, I should say. So funding for trains and active travel, such as walking and cycling, and less funding for roads than we used to see. So quite a shift in where funding is being spent. I think no one would say we've got the transport system that we want to have for the long term, but there's certainly a change in direction. We're now seeing, you know, big investment in rail transport, increases in passenger numbers, increases in reliability. So I'm hoping to see more and more of the impact and the outcomes for people as a result of this shift in transport policy. But quite controversially, you know, we saw the 20 miles per hour speed limit introduced into Wales. That's all part of that shift of encouraging and supporting people to walk and cycle and to take public transport over and above road transport, as well as to make it a safer place to be driving in Wales. So that's one of the shifts that we've seen. Waste is another example that we've seen. Wales is actually second in the world in terms of recycling rates. And this is clearly all about understanding that we need to recycle more be reusing materials, using less energy and so forth. And so that's another example of how Wales is being changed or is changing as a result of the legislation. But those are the sort of Wales-wide examples. Right across the country, you will see decisions being taken at a local level, at a regional level, that decision makers, communities will justify on the basis of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act as being something that we need to do to be responsible citizens for future generations and making sure their interests are safeguarded when we're taking decisions now.
I love the way that you talk about this as a kind of a cultural and mindset shift in how these decisions are being made. I probably should have asked you this at the very beginning, but what are those 7 wellbeing goals? I think it'd be quite interesting to kind of see what's the spread of them. I know that they're rooted in the UN Sustainable Development Goals, but how has that been, how have you translated that?
We have 7 wellbeing goals, which capture the direction that we need to take. And public bodies are required to look at them all. They're not just looking at the ones that perhaps is more directly relevant to the area in which they work. And the 7 wellbeing goals are a prosperous Wales, which is very much about the economy and living standards, a resilient Wales, climate, nature, and so forth, the environment, a healthier Wales, a more equal Wales, a Wales of cohesive communities, a Wales of vibrant culture and a thriving Welsh language, and a globally responsible Wales, which is recognising our role in the world. So these are the 7 goals, and each of the 50 indicators are attached to the wellbeing goals. And, you know, most of them are attached to more than one. And so you've got that basket of measures of success of how well we're doing, and an attempt, a serious attempt to integrate agendas. So, you know, health boards are not just there to look at the health of the population. They're there to make sure we do the right thing for a more equal country, or to support our Welsh language, or to support our communities, and others recognising that the health service can't achieve its health outcomes without all the other players playing their role in supporting our health and well-being. So they're definitely meant to be seen as a collective rather than just focusing on one in isolation.
That's really interesting. I wanted to kind of come back to the international angle as well, if I may, because it's really exciting to me that this is rooted in the UN Sustainable Development Goals. But as you say, Wales is the only country that has legislated to start putting this into operation in a serious way in the public sector. Because the Act is unique to Wales, not even just in terms of the world, but in terms of Great Britain, England and Scotland and Northern Ireland, what problems and barriers have you encountered during the implementation of it, and how have you conquered those problems?
Well, it's difficult agenda to focus on the long term. We know government and public body decision making is geared towards the next election or the next budget cycle. So this is an attempt to try to look beyond that and enable our decision makers to look beyond the short term. So it's really challenging. You know, the biggest challenges are the probably the obvious ones, which is how are we meant to focus on the long term when we've got these very real big issues to confront here and now, and the media are more interested in the here and now than they are in the long term. So that's one of the biggest challenges. Finance. clearly a big challenge in all parts of the public sector in Wales. And I guess, you know, you were talking about different approaches in different countries. Some of the levers for some of these goals that we have, of course, lie at Westminster. They don't lie with the Welsh government. So the Welsh UK government is not falling under the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. So that causes challenges. And there, you know, there are no easy or obvious answers to all of these things. It's about finding solutions and looking for those solutions. I mean, clearly, if you think about health, we know big pressures on reducing waiting lists at the moment. But we have our waiting lists in many cases because we haven't dealt with the population health. We have higher levels of obesity in Wales than any other parts of the UK. We've got higher levels of diabetes type 2. Than anywhere else in the UK. So if we don't get ahead of those long-term trends, then the day-to-day issues get even greater and they become overwhelming. And our health minister, or previous health minister, now first minister, is on record as saying, you know, our health NHS in Wales will be unsustainable if we don't get ahead of these long-term trends. So it's not a matter of being able to wait until we've sorted the short-term issues out and then we'll get on to the long-term stuff. You have to do both at the same time. And that requires this mindset shift, this cultural shift, and where possible, finding the win-wins that enable them you to both do both at the same time. If you don't have that mindset about thinking about the long-term and the short-term, you're never going to, you know, think about the long-term issues at the same time and find the win-wins. But where possible, you need to find the win-wins and do both at the same time.
Interesting. So I suppose taking it from that macro level down to an even more granular level, I noticed when I was looking on the website that this applies all the way down to the procurement decisions of public bodies. And I was hoping you'd be able to tell me through an example of how a procurement would comply with the Act, the sort of results you've been getting. And I suppose I'm thinking, in my lawyerly brain, I'm thinking, how do these principles get reflected in due diligence questionnaires and selection criteria? How do they get reflected in contract wording? Or are you not quite at that stage with it yet?
It's getting to that point, and I think some public bodies are more advanced than others in seeking to do that. I mean, I guess there are two aspects of this. One is, you know, how we deliver public services and commission perhaps and look at services. So if you're looking from a wider perspective about how you perhaps, you know, deliver uniforms for the health service, and you're looking at trying to not just cheapest price, but strengthen communities and do it in an environmentally responsible way, you might be looking to do that work with a social enterprise that employs, you know, people furthest from the labour market in the way that Transport for Wales has done, when you are starting off the procurement process. So you have a different mindset about what you want to achieve over and above price. But then I guess in terms of practical approaches, what I'm encouraging more to happen is that when public SMEs or businesses are applying for contracts with the Welsh public sector, and when they're asked about community benefits or social value, the type of language that we use in this space, increasingly in Wales, we ask them to demonstrate as part of that social value approach what else they can bring to the contract that will enable that public body, which they're bidding for work, to which they're bidding for work, how they're going to help them deliver on their seven wellbeing goals. How are they going to support us to deliver on our 50 indicators? And for that to be part of the scoring process. So some public bodies are taking that approach, you know, increasingly right across the UK. I know people are looking, organisations look at social value and community benefits, but we're wanting that to be framed in terms of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act in Wales, so that when an SME is bidding to Caerphilly Council or they're bidding to an Iron Bevan Health Board, they're given the same perspective on what's expected of them in terms of their social value. So it makes it easier for SMEs, but then also crucially that is scored, and that's part of the criteria on which they're going to be judged in order to win the contract.
The hearing. On the outside, you're a lawyer, calm and cool, but inside there's a passion to perform, a drive to be absolutely on your game. You prepare hour after hour, day after day, in the pursuit of excellence, relying on superior resources, serious preparation, and total confidence. That's the advantage we give you. Be your best with Thomson Reuters Practical Law.
From the war in Gaza.
There are a huge network of tunnels underneath. It looks like a spider web.
To the front lines in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
No matter where the story is, Reuters World News Podcast is there. We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes, every weekday. I'm your host, Kim Vanell. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
I was wondering, this feels like you've moved on quite far from when the Generations Act was first put into law. It feels like you developed a lot of learning and a lot of systems, a lot of lessons learned. And so I was curious to ask you, if other countries wanted to implement this, what advice would you give them?
Well, great question. I could work full time, Becky, on supporting other countries around taking similar approaches, because we get a lot of interest in this. And the UN Summit of the Future, there was a big UN Summit of the Future prior to the General Assembly in September. And they agreed a declaration for future generations and a pact for the future. And they drew on the Welsh model, and they've agreed a special envoy for future generations based on my job role in some senses, or drawing on my job role. So there's a lot of interest around the world. We had a delegation from Maharashtra State in India, which is, you know, something like 123 million people, and there's 3 million people in Wales, and they're looking at their own, they're taking forward their own future generations legislation in the state of Maharashtra. So there's a lot of interest. Some of the advice that I do give is I will clearly share our experience, but I also, you know, explain that this is right for the Welsh context. It's not right for other contexts. So, for example, some countries are not keen on having an independent commissioner funded by government to potentially criticise government. Seems quite a brave thing to do. But we've got a tradition in the UK, and particularly in Wales, of having an older persons commissioner, a children's commissioner, a Welsh language commissioner. So that's part of how we've done this. And it makes sense for us to have an independent commissioner to work with government to deliver on the agenda. I think the other piece of advice that I would give is you have to take people with you on this agenda, because this is dealing with the big issues of our day, and many people are facing really tough times in Wales in terms of the cost of living crisis, in terms of access to healthcare, all sorts of things. So when we're making these big changes to tackle climate change, to restore nature, to have a more restorative farming, sustainable farming scheme, you know, changing our transport system so we have more investment in trains and walking and cycling over cars, then, you know, people need to be involved in those decisions and the decisions that affect them. So having the Wales We Want conversation at the very beginning was crucial to getting buy-in from civil society and the people that were involved, but also involving people in these decisions about the changes that we want to take and why we want to take them, and having an influence, a proper influence, a meaningful influence in those decisions is absolutely critical to this agenda, because if you don't do that, you don't get the right decisions, you don't get buy-in from people, and you potentially get pushback. So, you know, we're not doing everything right. I'm not saying we're getting that right, far from it. We've got a lot to learn, but that's a crucial aspect, I think, of this whole agenda.
So my last question to you, you are the expert in this area. I've just come in and done some light Google research. What is the question that you wish I'd asked you? What is the thing that you wish people knew that you haven't yet told them about the Act?
I would say the most important thing to take away from this conversation is what Wales is doing is a serious attempt to apply, implement long-term thinking and decision-making to government decision-making in Wales. And all governments, all public bodies, all businesses, you know, third sector organisations need to be doing this too. We are running out of time to be dealing with the climate emergency, the nature emergency, some of our long-term health trends, etc., etc. The list goes on. There will be other ways of doing it. Ours is not a perfect system, and we will certainly want to evolve it and improve it. But there are important lessons for how we're taking it forward in Wales, which hopefully can be of interest to others. Make it relevant to your context, to your organisation, to your country, but get on with it. We are needing to focus on the long term far more than we've done so previously, because we are running out of time to do the right thing for future generations, for our children, our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. And we need to be focusing on that now.
Thank you so much, Derek. I really love ending on that note.
The Hearing.
I found this interview incredibly optimistic, and the work the Welsh Government has done is truly a world-leading model that deserves greater recognition. It always comes down to this, though. Signing the international agreements is great, but putting them into effect is where the slow, hard work really gets going. Being able to learn from others who've already walked that path makes it a lot easier. A huge thank you to my guest, Derek Walker. I've been Becky Annison, and thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this, then please subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on any future episodes. And if you'd like to contact us, then please email thehearing@tr.com.
The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters. To find out more, go to tr.com/thehearing. Or subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.